Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 127 event, which takes place in London, England. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we won 1.4 units for UFC 222 after going 1-0 on our premium bet on Brian Ortega. We also lost our 1-unit free bet. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 127 features an 11-fight card in total and will be aired exclusively on UFC Fight Pass this Saturday. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on the preliminary card is a lightweight contest between Nasret Haqparast, who is 8-2, and Nad Narimani, who is 10-2. Now, Nick, where did this line open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Haqparast opened -120, Narimani opened -120, and these odds are courtesy of MMAOddsBreaker.com, our UFC Fight Night 127 opening odds reactions. That's posted on our site by Adam Martin, so make sure you check that article out. Adam also gives his initial reaction, obviously, to those odds as well. So those are the opening odds I'm quoting, and they're from the offshore sportsbook. So Narimani is -120 again, Haqparast -120. So it's basically a pick 'em fight exactly. And right now, looking over at our sponsor sportsbook, betdsi.eu, it is currently Haqparast -150, and Narimani is at +120. So a little bit more action coming in Haqparast's way. I agree with it. This is going to be a heck of a fight. Narimani is stepping in on short notice. He usually fights at featherweight, and this fight's going to be at lightweight. So the weight cut shouldn't be much of an issue, obviously, because he gets that extra 10 pounds since he's fighting up a division. He's a Cage Warriors featherweight champion. He's a well-rounded veteran with a lot of good experience in the Cage Warriors organization. As many of you know out there, Cage Warriors is a legit league. I mean, they produce a lot of talented fighters that come from over in Europe and have success in the UFC. So Narimani is definitely a tested fighter that's going to bring it. And Haqparast has to be careful here because, I mean, Narimani is technical everywhere. He's got some good stand-up skill. He's got some speed. He's got some power. He's got some good takedowns. He's got some grappling. So he's a well-rounded fighter that's been tested, like I said. Haqparast is the younger fighter here. He's 22 years old. He made his UFC debut on short notice against Marcin Held, and he actually held his own. I mean, no pun intended there, but he had Marcin Held in trouble a few times in that fight, but ended up losing a decision, a close competitive decision, but a rightful decision to Held. Held deserved to win that fight. But I was still pretty impressed with Haqparast. He looked a lot better during his fight with Held than he did on footage. And you could definitely tell that he's a type of fighter that gets better fight by fight and more experience that he has. I mean, he's been training all over the place, really, but I think what's benefited him the most is his time at TriStar. I mean, he's been putting in some time there off and on, and I think that being around those championship type of caliber fighters have definitely gave him some confidence and kind of rounded out his game to the point where on the ground was probably his biggest flaw. But Haqparast has definitely improved his ground defense overall. He's improved his wrestling, and he's just a powerhouse on the feet. So he's got a dynamic, explosive knockout power. He's a type of fighter that actually, like I said, he's improved his wrestling to the point where he can get some takedowns on you. He has nasty ground and pound, and he can scramble back up out of bad positions. And again, his sub defense has improved since that early sub loss in his career. So I think here what you're going to see is an interesting close matchup that'll be competitive, but the difference is going to be Haqparast's power. I think Haqparast is going to be the bully here. I think he's going to be pushing the pace, and he's just basically going to be controlling the action here against Narimani, and it's going to lead him to probably a close competitive decision type of win. So I do agree with the early action coming in Haqparast's way. I think he probably wins this fight, and he improves. He's the type of fighter, in my opinion, that's going to keep taking strides, and you'll see the improvements fight by fight, and I think he's going to look even better than he looked against Held in this fight here, and he needs to, because again, Narimani is a very respectable opponent, and it's not going to be an easy fight, but I think Haqparast looks better, he looks improved, and he's going to come away with an impressive win here, so that's my pick.
Now, I agree. I think Hakparast actually is a bit underrated. I know he lost that first bout, but I mean, he actually had a couple good moments there against Held. And the fact that he didn't get submitted is actually a very good sign, especially against somebody like Nariamani that probably wants to take this fight to the ground. Hakparast is going to have a decent size advantage in this fight. I mean, Nariamani is talented. I mean, he is the Cage Warriors featherweight champ, but I mean, he's also taken this fight on about 1 week's notice up a weight class. So it's not going to be an easy task for him to go in there against a bigger, stronger guy on short notice and expect to out-grapple him over the course of three rounds, because I don't see Nariamani getting a finish if he does get a takedown. So I think Hakparast is going to be a little bit too big and too strong. And at some point, Hakparast, even though he's not as well-rounded as Nariamani, I think the size pays dividends and the power definitely pays dividends. Hakparast has fight-changing power, and I think that he can hurt Nariamani on the feet. So I think this fight will be competitive, especially early, but I think the power and strength and size of Hakparast will help him pull this one out. So my pick is going to be Hakparast. Now, moving up to the heavyweight division, we have Mark Godbeer, who is 13-3, taking on Dmitry Sosnovsky, who is 10-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Sosnovsky open -260, Godbeer at +180. Right now, looking over BetDSI, it is currently Sosnovsky at -285, the comeback on Godbeer +235. So a little bit more action coming in Sosnovsky's way. I get it. I mean, it's Godbeer, and a lot of people don't seem to respect him very much. I mean, I think he's a lower tier heavyweight, but he's probably a bit underrated, even though the heavyweight division isn't, as we all know, one of the UFC like dominant divisions, or a good talented division, we should say. Godbeer has a little bit of skill. He's a threat on the feet. He's got that experience again from the UK, and he's been tested already in the UFC. Now, he's been up and down, of course. I mean, he's got one okay win, and well, I should say he got the DQ win his last time out, but I don't really count that. Obviously, we shouldn't count that for him, because it wasn't that impressive, obviously. So he's going to have a fighter here in Sosnovsky where he can actually look pretty good if he's able to implement his game plan, which here should be keeping the fight upright and not letting Sosnovsky get him to the floor, because if he keeps it upright, I think Godbeer is actually going to have an advantage here in the striking area, which is kind of tough to say, but I mean, I think it's true here. I mean, Godbeer is definitely going to be the more dangerous and the more capable striker in this matchup. I'll get into Sosnovsky a little bit here. He's a wrestler, grappler, basically a ground specialist. He hasn't fought since May of 2015, so right away that should raise your eyebrow a little bit. But he is training with American Top Team, so he's training at a good camp. And again, I think what makes him an interesting fighter for the heavyweight division is his ability to get the fight to the ground. He doesn't have the greatest wrestling, but he's the type of fighter that kind of gets in close, uses his kind of sloppy, non-impressive striking to get in close, close the distance. His clinch game's actually pretty decent. He could do some damage in the clinch, but he can get his takedowns from the clinch as well. So once he gets in close, he's able to trip you down. And then once on the ground, he's got some good ground and pound, and he does look for some submissions as well. So that's his game. He tries to, you know, get you to the floor and just kind of work his ground game, so he's a little bit safer that way. Because if you watch Sosnovsky fight on the feet, I mean, he's slow, he's not that smooth, he's not that confident, and he's hittable. So that's why I think Godbeer can definitely have an advantage if it's on the feet here. So Sosnovsky, I don't know, I wasn't that impressed with him, honestly, in footage. I know, again, he has a pretty decent ground game and he has a path to victory here. That's why he's a solid favorite, because he probably goes into this matchup, grounds Godbeer, and then more than likely finishes him on the ground. So if that's the case, it's hard not to pick him here. I think he is capable of doing that, but man, I don't trust this guy yet. I mean, we're going to have to see some serious improvements in his game. He needs to improve his stand up a lot, because there's going to be several fighters in this heavyweight division that he's not going to be able to take down and implement that kind of game plan on. So I think he has a winnable matchup in his debut, but hard to lay the chalk on him. So be careful if you guys are laying almost 3-1. This is kind of, like I said, it's one of those spots where I think it could be a head scratcher, and Godbeer could be pull off an upset special here. So I'm going to pick Sosnovsky, though. Still, I think that he is probably the more capable fighter, and he should get the win.
This fight has the potential to be competitive. It just depends how Sosnovsky looks. We have not seen him yet in the UFC, despite him being booked several times in bouts against Justin Liddell that fell through. He has not fought since 2015, so that is a concern. I mean, the guy's undefeated, but he's not that refined as a prospect. Basically, he just strikes, like, I wouldn't even call it striking. It's more he waves his arms at his opponent until he gets close enough to try to go for a takedown. So if he does not get takedowns, Mark Godbeer actually has a chance to outstrike him and land some heavy shots against him, because Godbeer actually showed some decent striking against Daniel Spitz. So I expect Godbeer to have the edge and the feet. But what really matters is whether or not Sosnovsky can close the distance, put Godbeer on his back, and then what Sosnovsky really is solid at is just landing punishment from top position. He's very dangerous there. He's picked up multiple TKOs in his career through that. So I expect that that's going to be his path to victory. And Godbeer hasn't really shown that good a takedown defense, especially against guys with decent wrestling. And Sosnovsky being, you know, out of Russia, I expect his wrestling should be top notch, or at least good enough to overwhelm somebody like Godbeer. So, if Sosnovsky, you know, gasses out and isn't able to get takedowns, I think Godbeer has a field day. But if he does, I think Sosnovsky should be able to get the TKO. So my pick is going to be Sosnovsky. Now dropping back down to the lightweight division, we have Stevie Ray, who is 21-7, taking on Cajun Johnson, who is 22-12-1. Now, Nick, where did this line open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Ray open minus 175, Johnson plus 135. Right now over at BetDSI, it is currently Ray minus 188. The comeback on Johnson is at plus 158. So a little bit more action coming in Ray's way. Obviously, he is the more popular fighter at the betting window, and he's been, I mean, in several of his fights in the UFC thus far. A lot of people, another guy that came over from Cage Warriors and has had success in the UFC. Ray's the type of fighter that he has good striking. He's got a pretty good well-rounded game. I mean, in all aspects of the game, he's really solid, and obviously he's capable of finishing fights on the feet, especially. He's got some okay wrestling. What he lacks, though, is defensive wrestling. I think that's the area that he needs to improve on the most. I mean, not just in his UFC bout that he got repeatedly taken down over and over, and that was against, I mean, let's face it, it was against a solid kind of grinder in Patrick. That's what he wants to implement most of the time, so he had success doing so. But it kind of exposed Ray, and Ray is not going to face that type of fighter, you know, I mean, often, or every fight, we should say, steady. So he's had a combination of strikers mixed in with fighters like that. So in this spot here against Johnson, he's not that type of fighter that's going to consistently look for those takedowns. So I think Ray will have his opportunities and moments here to keep the fight upright, and that's where he does his best work. I mean, he's definitely has some power. He's got some clean striking, and he could definitely bang with people at 155 pounds in the lightweight division. I mean, if you look back at his fight against Pearson, I mean, Ross Pearson has always been respected as a striker in the lightweight division, and Ray basically outpointed him. It was a close competitive decision, but, I mean, that's the kind of level Ray's striking is at. So he should have the edge over Johnson on the feet. Johnson is coming off of a very impressive performance, honestly. I mean, who would have thought? Martins was a huge favorite over Johnson, and he ended up knocking Martins out. He implemented a very smart game plan. Martins wasn't aggressive enough, and Johnson just picked his spots, you know, moved around and was able to land the knockout eventually. So you got to credit Johnson where credit is due, because his flaw and his kryptonite is actually his striking defense and that chin. I mean, the guy's had his jaw broken. He's been knocked out several times. So that's what you can't trust with Johnson. Against heavy hitters, that chin can't be trusted. I mean, I almost feel he's at the point where if he keeps on getting knocked out, maybe another knockout loss or two, he should hang him up. I mean, he doesn't need to keep taking knockout losses. So hopefully for Johnson, it's not another one here against Ray, because I'll tell you what, if he doesn't get this fight to the ground, it very well could be. So Johnson is going to have to implement that type of game plan that some of the wrestlers in the past have used against Ray. Get him down, control him, try to take his back, just try to kind of grind him out, or even look for some submissions over Ray and try to get the job done that way. Because if they stand and bang, of course, Johnson could land that knockout blow against Ray, but I think more than likely Ray ends up knocking Johnson out. So Ray needs to keep this fight upright, fight smart, and try to knock Johnson out. Johnson needs to get the fight to the ground, in my opinion, and try to outpoint Ray and steal a decision here. So this is a tough one for me because I can see it playing out. If Johnson's chin holds up, I think he can win this fight. So I'm not as confident in the people that are betting the favorite right now in this spot. I am going to pick Ray to win, though, because, I think that if he does stay off his back, he probably is a more dangerous and more capable fighter here. So I'll slightly pick him to win. But, again, the concern here is Johnson not getting knocked out because I think he can steal a decision here. So close competitive fight. My slight lean is Ray at this point.
And I'll keep this one a little more brief. I just think Ray has the power. And while Johnson did showcase an impressive knockout in his last fight, I think that was more because Adriano Martins was sitting back and not doing enough. Johnson doesn't respond nearly as well when his opponent is picking up the tempo and putting some pressure on him, especially with the fact that he has, you know, very serious durability issues. Johnson, if he gets hit, you know, anywhere, like even close to the button, he is going to be in huge, huge trouble. And Ray has the durability that he can withstand a couple shots to dish one out, a good one. And if he lands a good one, I think it's night-night for Johnson. But as Nick mentioned, Johnson is a well-rounded fighter. I mean, this is a guy with a really good skill set. It's just he has that fatal flaw with the really bad chin. His other problem, of course, is that he's just been around the game so long that he's taken a lot of damage over the course of his career. So I just think that unless Johnson can get some takedowns, then I think Stevie Ray should steamroll here. Ray has good enough striking, good enough durability that, especially with Johnson getting the knockout in his last fight, he might be looking for the knockout here again. Sometimes fighters fall in love with that a little bit, and I think that that could definitely be a really poor decision for Johnson, but could just be a mental thing where now he thinks that he can just take on and take out anybody. So I'm going to pick Stevie Ray. I think that he does win by TKO at some point. Now, moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Paul Craig, who is 9-2, taking on Magomed Ankalaev, who is 9-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Ankalaev opened -410. Craig opened +290. Right now, looking over BetDSI, it is currently Ankalaev -657. The comeback on Craig at +467. So needless to say, that -410 number wasn't quite high enough. And more action coming in Ankalaev's way. I get it. I'm not surprised by it either. I mean, now, unlike Sosnowski here in this spot, with this Russian, Ankalaev, I think that he is deserving of the hype, and he is a very solid fighter. I mean, in all aspects of the game, he's really an excellent light heavyweight prospect. He's a striker with wrestling and solid ground awareness as well. Defensively, he's actually pretty solid too, which is, again, a good thing to see, especially in a prospect at age 25. His cardio is solid. He's got good power on the feet. He's got killer instinct. He's patient on the feet as well. And then he's got very good takedowns, very good takedown game and takedown defense to go along with it. And then once he gets on top, he's got outstanding ground and pound. So I think this is a difficult matchup for Craig to save at least. Craig is going to have to probably get lucky, maybe land something crazy, haymaker on the feet to try to, you know, knock Ankalaev out with something nuts on the feet, or maybe catch him in a guillotine or some kind of crazy submission on the ground. But outside of that, Craig's going to get beat up here bad. I mean, I don't think this fight's going to last very long. I think Ankalaev is going to be able to get top position and then just start unloading, and Craig's going to go to sleep when that happens. So not much more to say about this fight. I think Craig has a dangerous skill set. Like I said, he's got a little bit of power in the feet, and he does have some dangerous submission skill to go along with it. But I think that we're going to probably see Craig's fight days numbered here in the UFC, at least. I think he's probably going to lose this fight, maybe one more after this, and we'll see him cut, and he'll probably join, you know, go back on the smaller circuit and maybe eventually make his way back. But I don't know. That's going to be a high test as well. I just think that there's too many issues with Craig's overall game at this point to really compete, even though light heavyweight's fairly weak. We were talking about how weak heavyweight is. I still think that Craig is almost borderline UFC level. So Ankalaev is not. He is top tier, I think, in the light heavyweight division. I think if they match him up right, I think he could definitely make a run towards a potential title shot. I mean, if he gets that experience under his belt at age 25, like I said right now, maybe a couple more years, I mean, this guy is going to definitely be even better. So definitely keep an eye out on Ankalaev here. I think he's going to look great by defeating Craig probably inside the distance early on. So the pick is Ankalaev to finish Craig.
And I completely agree. I mean, Craig had a nice UFC debut, but he has not looked good ever since. And Ankalaev is a fighter worth getting excited about. I mean, this is a guy that is a top-notch prospect with competent striking, backed by excellent wrestling and good top control. I mean, he is a very, very well-rounded, dangerous guy making his UFC debut. And Paul Craig has been finished by strikes in his last two fights. He has not shown enough on the feet. I think Ankalaev, if he wants to, can just outwork him on the feet and land some good shots. And I think Craig will get knocked out at some point in a stand-up fight. And if it goes to the floor, Ankalaev probably gets top position and lands shots from top position and TKOs Craig. My real only concern is that Craig does have a pretty dangerous ground game. So if Ankalaev does shoot in for a takedown, the instinct takes over. Maybe he leaves himself exposed to a choke or a knee bar or something crazy on the ground, because Craig does know what he's doing there. He's got triangle chokes. He's got guillotine chokes. He's got arm bars. I mean, you name it, he can probably do it on the ground. So Ankalaev should not be screwing around too much on the ground. And, I mean, the opportunity to get the TKO on the feet is right there. So if Ankalaev is smart, he just does that. So I expect Ankalaev gets the win here. I think this is a guy worth getting excited about, especially in a shallow division like the UFC light heavyweight division. Ankalaev is a rare, bright prospect making his debut. Now, this is a guy that I could see being ranked within the top 15 if he just picks up a couple wins. So Ankalaev is going to be my pick. Now dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Danny Henry, who is 11-2, taking on Hakeem Dawodu, who is 7-0-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Dawodu opened -280. The comeback on Henry was at +200. And now looking over BetDSI, Dawodu is actually -340. The comeback on Henry is at +260. So a little bit more action coming in Duadu's way. Not really that surprised. I mean, he's the hyped prospect out of Canada that's been getting a lot of buzz for a long time. He's got a solid resume outside of the UFC actually as well. He's fought some solid competition and got some big wins, including a former UFC competitor in a pretty solid featherweight in Steven Seiler in his last fight. So Dawodu is definitely one of those guys that's known for his striking explosiveness, knockout power, just a striking technician that's a beast on the feet. But he's more than that, because he's definitely improved his overall game. He's got some decent wrestling to go along with it. He's got some decent takedown defense. And then defensively on the ground, I mean, he's not an easy guy to sub. I mean, Seiler had him in a couple times in some bad spots, and Dawodu actually was able to get out and then just reverse things and just outstrike Seiler to a decision win. So that's the type of fighter he is here. I mean, what you're getting from him, he's, again, conditioning wise, he's okay. He's an excellent striker, like I said, and then his ground game's coming along fairly well. So he's a serious prospect at age 26, and he's facing Henry, which we all saw just get destroyed early on in his UFC debut. Now, we should mention that was at 155 pounds, and Henry is dropping down to the division he belongs in at 145 pounds. But his fight against Daniel Tamer, man, was that crazy, because Henry just got lit up early on. He had to kind of survive, and then he made a heck of a comeback. I mean, he showed his toughness, his durability, and his skill set to be able to come back and win and earn a quality decision win over Tamer. That says a lot. I mean, the toughness and the chin and the heart that he displayed is amazing. But the problem with it is he did get lit up to the point where his striking defense is definitely a problem for him. So I know that he's got a solid chin, and it's not easy to put the guy out, but Dawodu is going to be the type of guy that's going to be quick, explosive. He's going to be landing on that chin. And I don't know if Henry's going to want to absorb a lot of punishment from Duadu either. So that's the issue here with me. I think Henry is the more, more well-rounded fighter, because I think Henry's ground game is better, still a level above Duadu at this point. But his striking is definitely not at the level of Duadu either. So this is an intriguing fight. I know for being a 3-1 favorite or over 3-1 favorite, Henry's probably not getting too much respect, but I think it could be another case where if Duadu is not careful, and this fight plays out and as it goes deeper, Henry's going to have his moments. I mean, especially on the ground, Henry's going to want to take this fight to the ground and try to work his magic on the ground as well. He does have a pretty decent sub game. He's got some good ground and pound to go along with it as well. So not an easy fight, not as easy as everybody's making out to be, but I do think, Duadu is a side here. I think that he probably picks Henry apart enough on the feet, and he's not going to have the conditioning problem that Tamer had making his UFC debut. I think Duadu's conditioning is okay. Like I mentioned, I don't think he's going to gas out. I think he's capable of going five, so a 3-round UFC debut for him is not going to be a problem. So I think that is the biggest issue for Henry here. He's not going to have that luxury of having the fighter gas out, and he could take over after that. So I think here Henry gets picked apart and probably outpointed. I think he can survive. I mean, there's a chance, obviously, Duadu knocks him out, but I think Henry's tough enough that he could possibly survive to see the cards, but I think the cards are going to go Duadu's way. So the pick is the Canadian prospect to look good and flashy in doing so and probably pick up a quality win.
I was actually really impressed with Henry's durability and heart in his UFC debut, fighting up a weight class against Tamer's brother. And he actually withstood the early aggression. And then when Tamer slowed down, he just turned it up a notch and was able to not just win, but win convincingly. So, that was just a really impressive performance. That being said, Duadu is a very talented featherweight striker. I mean, this guy mixes it up really well. He does not slow down, more importantly. So even though Henry is actually dropping a weight class and he's going to be very large for the division, I think Duadu, mixes it up with a really strong kicking game. He has, nasty body shots. I can see him just picking apart Henry on the feet and then not slowing down and giving Henry a chance to really fight back. Henry will be throwing, but, Duadu is technical enough and crisp enough that he should be able to use his distance properly, and I think that he can make Henry look foolish at points on the feet. So unless Henry can mix in takedowns, I think this is going to be a Duadu's fight to lose. I mean, this guy is a really sharp striking prospect. He's had all of his fights, I believe, in World Series of Fighting promotion, and he's looked pretty good in them. So this is a guy that has a lot of talent and a lot of potential, and Henry is more of a guy that weathers the storm, and I don't think that he can pull that off here against Duadu, because, again, I don't think Duadu slows down. So I think Duadu picks up a decision. Henry's tough enough that he probably doesn't get knocked out, but I think that he does take a beating here. So my pick is going to be Duadu. Now, moving up to the welterweight division, we have Danny Roberts, who is 14-3, taking on Oliver Enkamp, who is 7-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Roberts open -230, the comeback on Enkamp at +170. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it is currently Roberts -190. The comeback is +150 on Enkamp. So line dropped a little bit since the opener, and I do think that's probably right. I know a lot of people probably don't give Enkamp a ton of respect from what they've seen in his UFC debut against Talib. That was a tough fight, and he did make it on short notice. And Enkamp was another one of these guys that's from Sweden, that's a hyped European prospect. A lot of people are thinking, I mean, his nickname, I believe, was the future, or is the future. So he's only 26 years old, and he's got some skill, man. The kid does have some skill. Now, on tape, before the Talib fight, I wasn't that impressed. I thought, oh man, this kid has a long way to go. It's too much hype. But then he showed up against Talib and he actually looked okay. He performed better than I thought he would. And you could see the potential that he has with his skill set. He's basically a karate point fighting stylist on the feet. with unorthodox but technical skill. He's a little sloppy at times. I think that's what he has to clean up. I mean, with his unorthodox striking karate background, it kind of leaves some openings with his arms kind of flailing all over the place at times, and his chin can get exposed in the wrong spots possibly. So he definitely needs to tighten up that defense and get a little bit cleaner. But overall, I mean, I think that he's a pretty solid fighter. He moves well. With that said, about his defense and his sloppiness, he's still, you know, with like karate fighters do, they work around the octagon with the balls of their feet a little bit. So he's constantly moving his feet, and he's not a sitting duck for robbers to land on him. So that's a good thing defensively, at least. And man, he could throw some unorthodox kicks and have success doing so. His takedown game is actually pretty solid as well. It's probably a little underrated, and I think he's going to look for some takedowns against Roberts to go along with solid jiu-jitsu as well. So I think Enkamp, wherever you put him, I mean, if you put the guy on his back like Talib did, you saw the fits that Talib had. It's hard to deal with this guy because he's got those long limbs, and he kind of has that rubber guard that he pulls, and you can't do much against him. So either he's going to continue to look for submissions off his back and get you in trouble, or he's going to kind of slow you up and delay you by just holding a rubber guard, and you're not able to work. So he's going to get the stand up that way. So Enkamp is going to probably maintain this fight upright and get some takedowns offensively in his own right. Now, Roberts, on the other hand, he was a hyped prospect coming into the UFC, and I think he's had kind of an up and down career so far. I mean, he definitely has a ton of potential. The guy is a very good striker. Offensively, he's got good boxing, speed, and power. He is a southpaw with also a nice left high kick. I mean, I'm definitely impressed with his high kick because he could do some damage with it. I mean, he throws it quick. You don't see it coming oftentimes. And he, like I said, he's got enough power that he could definitely do some damage. So he also has some decent leg kicks to go along with it. He's solid off his back. He can throw up some subs for being a striking base fighter in his own right. And he's not easy to take down. And once you do get him down, he more times than not is able to get back to his feet. So Roberts is a tough matchup. What the problem is with Roberts, though, he is a bit chinny. Now, he's been knocked out twice in his career, so it's kind of maybe not fair to say that, but man, he's been clipped and he's been rocked, I mean, just too often so far that we've seen in the UFC. It doesn't take much, it seems. So Talib, again, another guy that got Roberts with a beautiful kick. I mean, you got to credit Talib for that, and I mean, he just hit him on a button, and Roberts was in some serious trouble there, and he went out. So he's coming off of that type of knockout loss, and he's facing an unorthodox, unique striker, I want to call it, in Enkamp here. I don't know. I mean, this is another kind of head-scratcher fight because I think Roberts is going to be the one that's going to be consistently pushing forward with his boxing and his striking ability. That's just going to be a little bit more steady and consistent, and Enkamp's going to be the one, again, working around the octagon and the balls of his feet, looking to pick his spots against Roberts. So Roberts could be pressuring him and kind of winning in the judge's eyes, but I think Enkamp's going to land enough along the way that it's going to get Roberts in trouble, and then Enkamp's going to probably utilize his submission and takedown game and get Roberts down enough that he steals a decision or possibly finishes Roberts on the feet, like I said, along the way. So I do like Enkamp. I think he's going to bounce back here after, you know, a pretty solid performance in his UFC debut. I mean, obviously could have went better for him if he would have won that fight, but against a very game opponent in Talib, I'm going to give the kid a break here and say that he's going to bounce back and look even better in his second fight with the full camp. So I think stylistically, this is kind of a bad matchup for Roberts. So I think Enkamp is going to expose Roberts even more here. So the pick is probably not going to be a popular one, but I'm going to pick Enkamp to actually pull off the upset win over Roberts here.
And I'm going to go the other way. Enkamp, while he didn't get finished by Nordine Taleb, I mean, that's about the only thing that he really showed me in that fight. I mean, he does come from that karate base, but I haven't seen a lot of power. And I don't think that his striking is dangerous enough that Danny Roberts needs to be, you know, overly concerned. I mean, basically, Roberts' biggest question mark is the fact that he's a bit chinny. And when he faces guys that are talented strikers that have some pop, I mean, he gets knocked out. I mean, that's how he loses right now. But against anybody else, I mean, he has good enough hands. He's got some power. He mixes in a little bit of wrestling. He can grind things out. I mean, he also has a bad tendency of making fights closer than they should be. But overall, I mean, I think that Roberts still is a decent enough fighter that as long as he's not matched against a technical striker with a lot of power, then he should be in good shape. And I just don't think that Enkamp is good enough at this point. I mean, he was raw when he made his UFC debut, and he looked a little bit better than we expected based off of what we saw on the film. But I just don't think he's closed enough gaps to pick up a win here. Roberts should get the better of him on the feet. Roberts has more power on the feet. And I think Roberts has better wrestling between the two of them and could get takedowns. So I think Enkamp is just, I mean, he came to the UFC for me like a year or two too early. So my pick's going to be Danny Roberts. I think that he gets enough done, especially in his home country. Now, closing out the preliminary card is a middleweight contest between John Phillips, who is 21-6 with one no contest, and Charles Byrd, who is 9-4. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Phillips open -160, Byrd +120. Right now, looking over Bet DSI, it's exactly pick a -115 each way. So a little bit more action coming in Byrd's way, but there is two-way action on this fight. I get it. I think that Byrd, you can make a case for him actually being the favorite in this fight. But this is going to be a tough fight for both fighters. Now, Phillips is making his UFC debut. I'm glad he is because he's an exciting fighter to watch. They call him the White Mike Tyson, and that's fairly accurate. The guy has a ton of power, but he has been out since September 2016 now. Granted, up until that time, I mean, he's had a little layoff, but he won his last 4 out of 5 fights by knockout. That's how powerful this guy is. And he's more than just a striker. If you look at him, I mean, obviously his best attribute is that power that he has on the feet. He throws bombs. And I mean, every punch he throws is with bad intentions. And if you get hit, it doesn't matter how good your defense is. I mean, it'll break through that defense sometimes. And that's how much power this guy possesses. And he can get through and land and get you in all sorts of trouble. On the ground, he's got really good ground and pound and decent awareness at times, surprisingly. I mean, as I look through some of his fight footage, you know, the more you look at his fights, the more that you obviously could pick up from these guys. And I was thinking to myself, a couple fights I saw his, you know, his takedown defense and people got on top of him and had their way with him a little bit. And I think, oh man, this guy's ground game is not that good. He does have a good guillotine choke, but outside of that, I mean, he's susceptible to getting taken down. But then other fights I did have seen some progress with him and some ability from him on the ground, which he transitions and reverses out of bad spots sometimes. So it's kind of hit or miss. It's kind of a head scratcher with Phillips as well. Because I think he's probably got a bit of an underrated ground game, but his best attribute is definitely on the feet. And if there's any flaws with him, it's probably still that ground game. So that being said, I think that's where Byrd can exploit Phillips in this matchup. Byrd is explosive in his own right. He's just a pure athlete, man. I mean, he's an experienced vet as well. He has skill in all areas to go along with a pretty decent ground game. I mean, I think Byrd is the type of fighter in most cases that can stand and bang with a lot of guys in the middleweight division. But here, obviously, that's Phillips' strength. So I think Byrd's going to game plan smart, and he's going to come in knowing that he wants to get Phillips to the ground. And once on the ground, Byrd is actually really capable of landing his own ground and pound. And then he has some pretty slick transitions into good positions and looks for the sub and looks for some damage on the ground as well. So I think that's Byrd's path to victory here, is getting Phillips on the ground, and then after that, just looking for position and trying to get Phillips out of there on the ground as well. The longer he stays with Phillips, the longer he's going to be in some trouble, because again, Phillips just throws every punch, every bomb that he throws is with bad intent. Now, Byrd has enough knockout power in his own right. I wouldn't be surprised if he catches Phillips, but I think the more Byrd plays with fire, the more he has a shot of losing this fight. So for Byrd, he wants to take this fight to the ground and utilize his strength in this matchup, which will be that ground game. So for me, I'm going to pick Byrd. I hope he weathers that early storm that Phillips brings, because he is definitely going to bring it. And if he does, I think Byrd can kind of survive and outsmart Phillips to the point where he transitions on the ground and gets the job done there. So I'm going to pick Byrd, but this should be a pretty fun fight.
Yeah, this fight's going to go one of two ways. Either John Phillips swarms Charles Byrd and just lands a bunch of haymakers and knocks him out quickly, or Byrd handles that crazy rush that Phillips is going to bring. I mean, he's called the Welsh wrecking machine for a reason. I mean, this guy literally just charges forward and tries to take his opponent out as quickly as possible. He is very aggressive to the point where he is telegraphing his shots. I mean, tiring himself out. So if Byrd has watched any of this guy's fights at all, he knows to be ready for that. I mean, I would expect he'd be looking to duck under a big punch and try to take Phillips down quickly, or just play defense, circle away from his power, and eventually Phillips can get frustrated. Byrd actually is a decent enough striker too. He should be able to hold his own in a pure striking contest. It's just more that Phillips sells out to try to take his opponent's head off. And as long as Bird doesn't get his head knocked off, then I think that he's in good shape. I mean, he actually could outstrike Phillips as the pace slows down, and he clearly has the better ground game. I mean, the guy picked up two submissions on Dana White's contender series. He is a pretty well-rounded overall fighter. So I think Charles Byrd has a good chance to pick this victory up as long as he does not get blown out quickly. So my pick is also going to be Charles Byrd. Now moving on to the main card on Fight Pass, we have a welterweight contest between Leon Edwards, who is 14-3, and Peter Sobota, who is 17-5-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Edwards open minus 300, the comeback on Sobota at plus 220. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it is actually minus 215 for Edwards, the comeback on Sobota at plus 170. So more action can come in Sobota's way. Not surprised. I think the line on Edwards was probably a little bit too high at that point because Sobota, man, I mean, he's definitely a very talented fighter. And in this recent UFC run that he's had, I mean, outside that Noke setback, he's looked great. I mean, Sobota is definitely the type of fighter that has improved, that's dangerous in all aspects of the game. I mean, the guy has underrated wrestling. He's got a good submission game, and he's got good quality striking. He's tough as nails to go along with it, and he's got good conditioning. So he's a tough out. And you know, you guys all know how I feel about Edwards. I mean, I've been high on this guy since his UFC debut. I mean, the ability and the skill that he has, and he's proven that recently. I mean, if you look at some of the quality wins that Edwards has over Luque, over Tumanov, over Barbarina, even that Barbarina win, I mean, Barbarina, he made it tough, man. I mean, Barbarina is just one of those tough fighters that is never an easy out. So, I mean, it was a grueling fight for Edwards, but he got through it. So he's just the type of fighter that improves, and he's only 26 years old, and he's only going to get better. Edwards has strength. He's got some good striking ability, obviously. He's got knockout power, but his wrestling has come a long way, and his submission game has come a long way as well. So this is going to be a great fight. It's going to be another hard test for Edwards, though. That's why I think the early action that came in at the price of the dog price on Sobota, I understand it, because I do think this is going to be a 29-28 type of competitive decision win for Edwards. You know, both these guys are honestly trending upwards. I mean, both of them are quality fighters. So I think that even if Edwards comes away with a win here, he probably won't get enough credit in beating Sobota, because it's not going to look as good on his resume as some of the other wins like Luque and Tumanov. But man, I'll tell you what, this is going to be another quality win. So Edwards is definitely trending in the right direction if he keeps on getting knocking fighters like this off as he continues his upward climb. So the pick is Edwards. I think he does what he does best. He's going to control the action a little bit. He's going to probably bully Sobota enough that he ends up grinding him out and getting a decision win in a close competitive fight. So Edwards is the pick.
Sabata's a savvy vet, so Edwards should not be taking this fight lightly. But this is definitely a step down from what Edwards has been doing. I mean, he's ranked now, Edwards, number 15 in the welterweight division, granted barely ranked, but he's on a 4-fight win streak with some quality victories over Albert Tumanov and Vicente Luque, and they matched him in against Peter Sobota. It doesn't really make a lot of sense, so this could be a trap fight. So I'm hoping Edwards is taking this fight seriously. But if he is, Edwards should have the power advantage on the feet. He should have the wrestling advantage on the ground. I mean, he's really focused on his wrestling after that loss to Kamaru Usman, and he's become a dangerous grappler. I really do like Leon Edwards here. I think that he has solid takedowns. He's got the power. I mean, Sobota can be finished if with a good enough body shot. I mean, probably get taken out with a headshot, but the main thing here is Sobota does have competent boxing, so Edwards can't get lazy on the feet because Edwards is a bit hittable, and Sobota does have a pretty good submission skill set. So again, if Edwards is shooting in for takedowns and leaves something there, Sobota could reverse him, he could sweep, he could potentially go for a submission. So Edwards has the tools here to pick up a relatively one-sided victory, but again, he has to be on his guard at all times and not slack off at any moment, because Sobota could take advantage. So my pick's Edwards, but I just hope that he is taking this fight as seriously as all of his others that he has on this current win streak. Now dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Tom Duquesne-Waugh, who is 15-2 with one no contest, taking on Tarion Ware, who is 17-6. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Duquesne-Waugh opened -350 to come back on Ware +250. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it is Duquesne-Waugh -350 or -340 to come back on Ware at +260. Now, it was under 300 earlier, and now it's starting to climb back up a little bit. So early action was on Ware, and now we're starting to see the action come back on Duquesne-Waugh as well. So it looks like the opener was spot on here and this spot here. And I think it's fair. The early action on Ware, I get it. I mean, you got to respect Ware. He's another one of these established veterans that have been on, you know, before he came to the UFC. Respect level has been good because he's been on the LFA type of shows and, you know, the Access TV type of shows, and he's performed relatively well against solid competition. So Ware is another one of these guys. And even in the UFC so far, honestly, if you look at Ware's fights, I mean, he's had no favors done for him. I mean, stepping in your UFC debut against a Stamen and, you know, losing a competitive decision to him. And then O'Malley, that second round he had against O'Malley, and we all know how legit O'Malley is at this point as well. I mean, you could say a lot of good things about Ware, and he's fighting another guy in Duquesne-Waugh now that, you know, he's stepping in three fights in a row that it's just difficult to see Ware winning any of these fights, really, but he's the type of fighter that's always game, and he's always going to make it a fight. So this is another spot for Duquesne-Waugh that is not going to be an easy fight, because you know Ware's going to bring it. He's going to constantly put the pressure, be in his face, but I think Duquesne-Waugh is just a little bit better everywhere here. He's the more explosive striker here. I think he's the better wrestler here. I just think that other than Ware's pace that can definitely be disruptive, I think that Duquesne-Waugh is just going to be a little bit of the cleaner puncher, the harder hitter. I think he's going to, again, be the one that gets control of this fight when it hits the floor. And he's just going to edge Ware out to the point where it's probably another competitive 29-28 type of decision win for him, maybe a 30-27 type of decision win for him. I just think Duquesne-Waugh is a little too much for Ware at this point as well. So three straight losses probably for Ware, which is a shame because I think he deserves to stick around in the bantamweight division. Honestly, I'm hoping that they let him have one more fight and give him a winnable fight for him. My goodness. I mean, they just keep on matching him up with these serious prospects. So I get it. Ware is a good test for all these guys, but you know, he's the type of fighter, like I said, I'd like to see him stick around and probably get a win or two because he's capable of getting a couple wins in UFC as well. So good fight. It should be fun to watch. But Duquesne-Waugh is going to probably run away with this on the scorecards.
Yeah, I really like Duquesne-Waugh here. I mean, Duquesne-Waugh is an excellent prospect. He lost a close split decision against Cody Stamen in his last fight, and this is the type of guy that always is looking to better himself. I mean, he didn't jump at the first opportunity to come to the UFC because he wanted to keep getting better. And he felt he was ready, so when he came over, I mean, he was ready to make an immediate impact. And he ran into Stamen, who was able to kind of outlast him a little bit and eke out a close decision. And now Stamen's ranked in the top 15 easily. So Duquesne-Waugh, I think he wants to follow those footsteps and get right back in the mix. And this is a good step for him. Ware is a talented fighter, but he's not an elite fighter. He's a guy that is a capable striker with a little bit of takedown ability, but Duquesne-Waugh is a crisp, dangerous, technical striker. He has a legitimate, nasty ground game, good top position, pretty good wrestling. So I think Tarion Ware is in for a world of hurt here. I mean, he is facing a pissed-off Duquesne-Waugh who wants to get his respect back, and I think that he's going to beat that respect out of Ware. So my pick is going to be Tom Duquesne-Waugh. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the light heavyweight division, we have Jimmy Manoa, who is 17-3, rematching Jan Błachowicz, who is 21-7. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Mano opened -210 to come back on Blackwich at +160. Right now looking over at betdsi.au, it's -214 for Mano, while the comeback on Blackwich is at +169. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. Line stayed fairly steady, obviously. It was a good opener. I just don't really agree with it though overall. I think Manoa obviously won the first matchup. I don't even know why they were rematching, honestly. I mean, it was a unanimous decision win. It wasn't even a split. Although It was a very competitive fight. For unanimous decision, it was actually a very competitive fight. If you go back and watch through that fight, I mean, Black Witch gave everything Manoa can handle. I mean, if Manoa didn't push forward enough and wasn't the aggressor in that fight, obviously that's why it won him the fight, and that's what wins you a lot of fights. I get it. But that was just enough to edge out the rounds for him. Outside of that, I mean, Black Witch struck with him fine. I mean, he wasn't intimidated. He landed his shots as well. So it was a very, very competitive matchup. So the line at -210, I think, is a tad, or -214 where it is right now. It's definitely a tad high, because this is a pick'em type of fight with a slight lean towards Manoa, in my opinion. And it's going to be competitive. And Black Witch getting a shot at redemption here, again, it doesn't make much sense, but I think he could win this time around. That's a crazy thing. I think he's actually looked better since their last meeting than Manoa. Manoa was coming off of a devastating knockout loss to Ozdemir, so that's another head-scratcher. Manoa was not getting any younger. His chin, we all know, is definitely a concern for him, even though he's one of the most devastating strikers offensively in the whole UFC, really, on the roster. I mean, Manoa has vicious knockout power. I mean, he's put people to sleep left and right, and that's what he's made of. I mean, offensively, the guy has that kind of knockout power, but defensively, I mean, he gets clipped and he can go down, obviously. And Ozdemir does have a lot of good knockout power. We know that. Anthony Johnson, before Ozdemir, was the last guy to knock him out, and he's got vicious knockout power. So it's not like he's getting knocked out by cupcakes, but that being said, he's not getting any younger. And Black Witch, even though he doesn't have that kind of knockout power as Ozdemir or Johnson, he still has enough to get the job done here as well. So I think here, Black Witch knows he has to be a little bit more aggressive. And if he is just a tad bit more aggressive, I think he'll have more success on the feet. He could possibly knock out Manoa this to go around. If not, the cards are going to be much, much closer. So I think we're going to see another competitive fight as we did the first time, but I don't think it's going to be as much Manoa controlling and just bullying Black Witch around as much. I think Black Witch is going to be a little bit more aggressive. I think he's going to find his opportunities. And if it does hit the scorecards, which I don't expect it to hit the cards this time around, I think Black Witch probably edges him out. And if it doesn't hit the scorecards, surprisingly, I think it's going to be Black Witch the one knocking Manoa out. So I'll go against the grain here. I'm going to go with Black Witch. I think that, I mean, there's a rematch here for a reason. I think it's a winnable fight for Black Witch. I mean, he was very close the first time around. I think if he makes a few adjustments, he can win his fight. So the pick is Black Witch to pull off the upset over Manoa.
And I'm going to go the other way. This fight is probably going to be competitive, but the first time that these guys fought, it was not a very entertaining scrap. I mean, I think somebody was a little injured in the fight, and basically Manoa just pressed forward and clinched against Blachowicz and outstruck him a little bit over the first two rounds and was able to win a decision. And it was ugly and slow and plodding, and there really weren't any exciting moments, hardly at all. So this time around, I think the fight will be a little bit different. Manoa is the more powerful striker, but he does have the worst chin, clearly. And Blachowicz, while he doesn't have a ton of power, I mean, he is a pretty good striker. He's probably as technical of a striker as Manoa. So if he gets into an extended stand-up exchange, Blachowicz actually has a decent chance to make something happen, but he does have to worry about protecting his own chin because, again, Manoa is dangerous. On the ground, we really haven't seen much out of Manoa other than occasionally he'll, you know, get top position against somebody and land some strikes. Blachowicz actually does have a little bit of wrestling. I mean, clearly Blachowicz has been taken down by fighters with very good wrestling and beaten up, but Manoa is not one of those types. So that is a concern, is maybe Blachowicz gets some takedowns. Maybe Blachowicz lands a good shot on the feet. But just going back and watching that last fight, none of that stuff really happened. So I don't know. Maybe Blachowicz has a little bit more confidence now. I know that he was willing to stand and engage with Alexander Gustafsson, a fighter that doesn't have a great chin. And he actually had some confidence and he was actually doing pretty well. So maybe he's gained that bit of confidence he needs to go in there and stand toe-to-toe with Manoa, especially now that Manoa has been knocked out a couple times since they fought. But I think Manoa, as long as he puts the pressure on Blachowicz and does force some clinches, I mean, he might be able to repeat the success of the last fight. And he still does have that devastating power that a lot of fighters fear. So I can see Manoa repeating his last performance, but hopefully it's a little bit more exciting. But my pick is going to be Manoa. I am not that confident about it because, as mentioned, the chin and potentially the wrestling could become factors here. Now, this takes us to the main event of the evening in the heavyweight division. We have former champion Fabricio Werdum, who is 23-7-1, taking on former Bellator champion Alexander Volkov, who is 29-6. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Werdum opened -245, the comeback on Volkov at +175. Right now, looking over at betdsi.eu, it is currently Werdum -195, the comeback on Volkov +155. So again, line margins have tightened up a little bit, and the line has dropped slightly with a little bit more dog action coming in this fight. There is two-way action, though, and people are going to parlay Werdum as well, put him in straights, and I expect this line to kind of bounce back and forth, might jump up over 200, might drop back down a little bit lower as well. But I think it'll stay ballpark to where it is now overall. And it's a tough one because obviously Werdum is one of the best heavyweights ever, really. If you think about the all-time history of the sport, I mean, the improvements that he's made, he's been known for his grappling, but man, has his striking really come on the last couple of years? I mean, he's improved quite a bit. So from his days back in Pride till still being relevant in 2018, the UFC title contention pitcher. It's amazing what this guy's done. And his conditioning's improved, just his overall game, his confidence, everything about him. So Werdum is no easy out. He had an impressive performance last time out against Tabura. I think it was a solid decision win for him. Before that, another kind of up-and-coming heavyweight, he dismantled Walt Harris. So the UFC's feeding him these potential up-and-coming heavyweights that can maybe challenge him in a way, and Verdum's just getting rid of him. I mean, he's just, you know, making short work of him in most cases and getting him out of there. So these guys are failing. They're not stepping up and kind of grabbing that spot from Werdum. Volkov has the opportunity to do that here as well, and it's another tough one for him because obviously if you look at Volkov, what his problems have been in the past, being put on his back, being, you know, outgrinded a little bit in fights, being submitted, that is not anything you want to hear when you're facing Fabricio Werdum. So stylistically, a lot of people might say this is a terrible nightmare type of matchup for Volkov because Werdum is going to do just that. He's going to look to take this fight to the floor. And then once on the ground, I mean, he's going to have his way with Volkov. Werdum is that good on the ground. But all that being said, I think Volkov has improved. I mean, since the time that we saw Congo and Bellator grind him out a little bit, or Tony Johnson grind him out a little bit, I mean, I think he's made it a point to improve his takedown defense, to improve his wrestling. And we've seen the progression in that aspect of his game to the point where I don't think he's an easy guy to take down anymore. And I think Verdum's wrestling is to the point where it's going to be challenging for him to actually get this fight to the ground as well. So if he can't get this fight to the floor and it stays standing, we have a fight on our hands here. I mean, Werdum, like I said, he's improved. He's dangerous. I could see Werdum catching Volkov and knocking him out. I mean, that's how much he's improved his stand-up game. But Volkov is definitely, in my opinion, the better overall striker. He's a little bit longer. I think, technically speaking, he's still a little bit better than Werdum. But both these guys have knockout power. Of course, they're heavyweights. And honestly, the first one that lands can just end the other one's night. That lands clean, at least. So this is going to be an intriguing fight, to say the least. Volkov just has to make sure he doesn't get put on his back or let Werdum take his back. And if he doesn't do that, I think he's going to be more than competitive, and he'll probably come away with a possible win here. Now, whether it hits the scorecards, I doubt it goes all five because these guys are capable of finishing the fight either way. So it's a long five rounds to go with the kind of finishing ability these guys have. But that being said, I wouldn't be surprised if Volkov tests that chin of Werdum. I mean, Werdum has been knocked out a couple times in his career now. He's not getting any younger, even though he's looked great at age 40. I think that chin is going to definitely be suspect from here on out, no doubt. And Volkov has enough length and power and accuracy to probably test that. So I'm going to go on a limb and pick Volkov for the upset here. I think that Werdum has been great. And again, he's one of the best heavyweights on the roster, but the UFC keeps on giving them these up-and-coming guys for a reason. I mean, I think part of their plan is to get one of these guys to pick him off and kind of take his spot. And I think Volkov could probably do that. So tough test. We'll see how he does here, but I think Volkov is capable of winning this fight. So not, again, might not be a popular decision, but I think that Volkov is going to be my pick for this fight.
Fabricio Werdum has surprised me several times in the past against up-and-coming heavyweights. especially, you know, I thought the first time they fought, that he fought Travis Brown, that maybe Brown might be able to get him with his power, with his size, but Verdum stifled him. And then obviously we've seen Brown hasn't quite been as good as we expected, but he looked great against Tibora. He looked great against, you know, several fighters. I mean, he knows how to win. He has elite ground game and excellent Muay Thai skills. The biggest problem with Verdum is clearly, you know, his chin. And so far, he doesn't usually leave his chin exposed against most opponents. So it's usually a lot tougher to hit him than you'd think. And, you know, but at 40 years old, Verdum clearly does have the potential to get knocked out. I mean, we've seen it. When he gets hit hard, he gets in trouble. I mean, even his last impressive performance against Tibora, he did get put in a couple dangerous positions because he ate a couple shots and got hurt a little bit. Against Volkov, Volkov does have that really crisp technical boxing, and Volkov is going to be the taller, longer guy. So if this fight stays standing, I think Volkov's hands are going to be just as good as Verdum's, if not better. Obviously, Verdum can mix things up a little bit with his knees, elbows, with the kicking game. And then if it goes to the floor, Verdum is one of the best submission heavyweights of all time. And Volkov definitely would be in huge trouble if he finds himself on his back at any point, or even just on the ground in general against Verdum. So I would assume that he is going to be trying to avoid that at all costs. Volkov has some power. He has the ability to throw in combination, and his conditioning is pretty rock solid. You saw that in the Struve fight. He just kind of wore Struve down, found a couple opportunities, and then just unloaded and was able to get an impressive finish. So against Verdum, he's going to have to be patient. Verdum can be very tricky. I mean, he does a lot of silly things on the feet sometimes, like he'll point at his opponent's foot and then punch him in the face. And, you know, like he has a lot of veteran savvy tricks up his sleeve, and Volkov should not fall for them. I mean, as long as Volkov is circling and using proper angles and keeping his distance, I think he's got a shot here. If he loses control, if he lets his emotions get the better of him at any point, if he, you know, gets off balance or allows Verdum to close the distance, then this fight could be turned on its head at any moment, because Verdum is the better overall, more well-rounded fighter. But Volkov is younger, longer. I think he has just as much power, if not more. And he definitely is a little bit more durable too. So I'm going to pick Volkov. I think that the timing, as Nick mentioned, could be right for an upset here. So I think if Volkov can avoid Verdum's kicking game and avoid especially the grappling game, there's going to be potential for him to land a good combination or just land one good clean punch that could set up a TKO. Or maybe he might just be able to outwork Verdum over the course of 5 rounds with his length and reach. So my pick's going to be Volkov. I'm not insanely confident about it because I know how good Verdum is, and it does not usually work to my advantage to pick against him, but I'm going to pick the Russian nonetheless. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 127. Check out all of our staff picks and Fight Night articles on MMAOddsBreaker.com. And if we have any free plays to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of any free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsBreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.